Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Storytime.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This story dates back to 2014, and it's probably the first time I've ever opened up about it. I have shared a few bits and pieces with a couple of friends of mine, but never the whole story in its entirety. I can't disclose where it happened because I still work for the state, and I don't feel like risking getting fired. But if you look on a map, it's in the northern part of the state, about halfway between Sacramento and Tahoe. There's a huge hint for you. I was working as a campground host at one of our local state parks, living in the employee housing. One afternoon, while all the guests were at their cabins and busy, I had some free time, so I decided to do a little exploring. I had hiked in the area by myself a few times already. There were tons of trails nearby that I had not yet explored. The park was a good size with well over 50 miles of trails crisscrossing the backcountry. Back then I didn't own a car, so I took advantage of it and would go hiking every chance I could. The park I was working at had two main roads that went through it. One road came into the park from a small town just south of us, and ran all the way to another small town to the north, about 10 miles away. The other road split off from the first and went up into the mountains. As far as I know, I never got that far. That's really the only way in or out of the park, so you've got to take one or two of these roads to get anywhere. The day I decided to take the road that led south from the park, it was extremely twisty and had lots of sharp turns. That was the bad thing. The good thing is it's really secluded, and there's virtually zero traffic. A lot of people don't even know these roads exist, or so it feels. The first half of the road was pretty easy hiking. The elevation stayed very constant and just followed a small creek that was fed by several smaller lakes in the area. After a while, the road split off from the creek, turned to the east, and climbed up into a steeper canyon. The road went up the canyon for about another 2 miles or so before eventually flattening out when it came to a larger rock quarry. The quarry was huge, about a mile and a half wide. I'd seen it plenty of times before while hiking, so as I was walking just deep enough to where I couldn't see it anymore, it was silent except for my footsteps on the gravel. And out of nowhere, I hear this primal animal scream. It did not sound like a mountain lion or coyote or anything like that. I've heard plenty of those before, and they sound different. This was more like a howl, a really deep one, but not in any way you could imagine. A real wolf's call has a deep tone to it and can be drawn out for several seconds. This was shorter, sounded higher pitched in comparison. It definitely was not an elk either. Elk calls are very distinct and only make certain noises depending on whether they're alarmed or angry or what. This was something completely new. We don't have anything in California that sounds remotely close to what it did. I hear it get closer, still in the distance, but definitely headed my way. As the noise got closer, I began hearing other noises along with the howling sounds, all coming up from ahead where the road was, and I could not figure out what they were. Anyway, I kept walking while trying to just focus. I see this thing pop out on the road up ahead of me, stop, look over in my direction, and quickly cross. I must say, I've never seen anything quite like it. This thing was strange. I wasn't sure what to make of it. Its features were human-like, but it was almost different in every way. The one thing that really got me was that it appeared to have no arms. It was also short, very thin, with pale gray skin. Its head seemed somewhat larger than its body. It had these large black eyes, and its face seemed kind of featureless, with a flat nose with slits and a mouth that didn't really show much. I decided after that I probably shouldn't go any further. I had zero desire to meet whatever that thing was. I turned around and hiked back the way I came. Even though this happened back in 2014, it's still as fresh in my mind as ever. I still have nightmares sometimes and am constantly trying to find ways to rationalize what I saw. I just don't understand how there could be something like that out there in the woods, let alone so close to town. I've tried to see if there's anything like what I saw on the internet, but I've not had any luck. I still keep looking though. I spoke to my sister about it. She thinks it's nothing more than the ghost of a hiker. Maybe if I ever find something like this on the web, that'll be what it turns out to be. I don't think it's a ghost though. It did not resemble a ghost in any way, shape, or form. This was something that was physical, like a flesh and blood being. Any feedback would be appreciated, but if it helps at all, it looked more like an alien than it did a ghost. My 3-year-old son suffered from chronic ear infections last year, which led to him having high fevers. I slept with him on this particular night because I needed to give him Tylenol throughout the night to keep his fever down and keep him comfortable. I set my alarm to wake me up at around 2:30 a.m. When I woke up, I went into the kitchen to get the Tylenol. I noticed a bright light shining into the apartment from our deck door, which also illuminated part of the woods behind the apartment. When I went over to see what it was, it turned out to be a car with those bright LED headlights in the parking lot to the far back right of the apartment. I figured they were dropping someone off. I saw the movement of what resembled a dog walking around near the woods. I started to think that the lady who usually walks her dog, a cute little corgi in that area, purposely faced her car in that direction, so she could see while she walked her dog. As it got closer, I realized that there was nobody out there walking a dog, and there was no dog. I don't know what it was that I saw, but I'll describe it in the best way I can. At first it looked just like a dog corgi size, but as it walked closer it looked like your average house cat. Then it looked like a black bear, and then it looked like a koala. I live in North New Jersey farmland and lots of woods, and there are no wild koalas here. At this point, my heart is pounding out of my chest, and I am scared. The fear I felt was like a primal type of fear I have never felt before. I ran to my bedroom to wake up my boyfriend, and I shook him awake very roughly. I said, "You gotta come see this." He was a bit annoyed with me. When we looked outside together, we saw this thing getting closer, and it looked like a skunk now. White stripe down the center with a perky, fluffy tail. I said, "Oh, it's just a skunk," with a little chuckle. I felt a bit embarrassed that I woke him up over a damn skunk. But at that moment, I also felt relieved. However, I was mistaken. As it walked, it looked as if it was struggling to find a form. I thought it looked like it was falling apart, but also coming back together again at the same time. I know this doesn't make sense, but it's hard to find the words for what we saw. After the skunk formation, it looked like a person crawling on the ground with some type of fur or skin attached to them around the leg. Then it changed again and looked like a raccoon, groundhog, black bear, cat, koala, deer, and skunk. The part that stuck out to me the most was that whatever it was seemed to be coming apart or shedding, but at the same time it was growing. Whoever had their headlights on turned them off as it went deeper into the woods. This happened pretty quickly. I'd say it was only about a couple of minutes from start to finish. He ended up going back to bed, but I couldn't sleep after that, so I grabbed a flashlight and shined it into the woods to see if I could see it again, but it was gone. I also opened the door to see if I could hear anything, but I couldn't. It was very quiet. I had a very hard time going back to sleep that night. My boyfriend wasn't scared, but he was confused and stunned. He didn't know what to make of it. I was scared and creeped out. I know if I hadn't woken him up to see it for himself, he most likely wouldn't believe me and would have chalked it all up to me being groggy from just waking up or it just being an animal. Unfortunately, I know what I saw and I'll never forget it. I had a self-rescue I had to do in the Laramie Peak Range. I lost my gear and map and shelter in a windstorm. Took a few days to get out, had some deeply unpleasant experiences along the way. This isn't that story. It sucked ass, but not all that scary. I kept a cool head. Typically, that's who I am. I'm the person who stays calm in crisis, and I'm in tune that to give you a litmus test for what it takes to freak me out, to make me lose my cool. This is about a time when I had all my gear, but I couldn't keep my cool. There are a lot of cool little trails in Colorado, some well-known, some only locals know. There are mountains and forests for days out there. In 2013, we got torrential downpours in September along the eastern slope. It was squelchy as shit for a while, and then a glorious mushrooming boom happened. I love mushrooms. I love to forage, take one, leave three, and my absolute favorite is the Boltis rubriceps. The conditions weren't exactly right, but I thought, why not? I gave it a shot. I'm not saying where my spot is. Wild horses couldn't, etc. I will say I also have the native hazel there, some actually fruiting manzanita, watermelonberry twist-talk claspleaf, currants, rosehips, raspberries, strawberries, and a frequently oysters, morels, hawk's wings, puffballs the big ones in one meadow, milky caps, chicken of the woods and chicken of the road, and the only chanterelles I've found in the region, all in a glorious few acres. It's wonderful. I can disperse camp there. This is where I went, no-brainer. Now it's fall, even if it's somewhat early fall, so I know that Yogi and Boo Boo are going to be out stuffing it for the winter, so I've got my spray and my uncle's lever-action 44 Mag Henry. Girlfriend at the time was supposed to come with, but couldn't get off work, so solo it was. I figured I could practice some firecraft, maybe build a chair, maybe a smoker, and in general just have a nice few days out. I went up early in the morning, hiked about 7 miles in, set up my shelter, set up to enjoy the rare luxury of a real fire in Colorado later, and started to do my stuff, set up a couple rods with bells, got out my baskets and set up my dryer in its shelter far away from my sleeping tarp shelter. I was squelching around with my foraging gear out in a few minutes and having a blast. I marched happily along pretty much until dusk, and then pulled out my headlamp and kept going well past I should have, but damn did I get a haul. It was an incredible spread, and I left plenty for the woodland critters. I got back to my camp, started cleaning and drying, and probably didn't get to my dinner until 1 in the morning. I had caught 2 brook trout of reasonable size, gutted them, and let them hang in a bug net nesser the creek for the next day. Figured it was cold enough that they'd be okay. I got back to my little dinky tarp shelter around 3 a.m., and went inside, toweled off, and passed out. I awoke around 10 a.m. or so the next day and the woods were silent. I mean, no birds, no bugs. Wind in the branches, nearby brook gurgling, and that's it. Usually there's something. I decided to be cautious and go about my business. My camp was exactly as I had left it, except for 2 things. The first was there was a branch, about 2 feet long, thick as a wrist, laid against the tree my pack was tied to. It had been gnawed, like by a beaver, on both ends, which I have heard of, but have never seen before or since. It had no bark on it, but still was green wood. Had to have been left there, but to what end I have no idea. Unsettling. Sure. Freaky. Not really. I wasn't scared. Actually, my first thought was I must have picked it up and forgotten about it. and I put it out of my mind and went to collect my fish, which hopefully were still there and weren't rotten or nasty yet. I got into sight of them, or rather, the bug net they were in. They were gone. Bug net was loose but intact, it's the drawstring bag shaped kind and empty, and both fish heads were still hanging in there, but the rest of the fish were gone. Okay. Probably another person then. Someone is giving me the Scooby-Doo treatment. I had a bunch of charcoal from the fire, and there was a nice big rock next to my fishing spot, so I scrawled on there. If you're hungry, come say hi and I'll share my meal, with an arrow pointing roughly towards my camp. Grumpy more than unsettled now. I guess weird beaver branch is a trade for my fish. Whatever. I went to check on my drying shrooms and my berry cooler, and lo and behold, everything under the tarp is untouched. However, I hadn't swept out any of the debris beneath it. Why bother? Well, now there was no debris beneath my tarp. Just straight dirt and rocks. Weird again. I started looking more seriously for tracks and find nothing. Probably debris swept out from under my shelter was covering them. F it. Not here to play junior detective, I'm here to frolic in the woodlands and collect responsible amounts of treasured forageables, goddammit. I shake it off, go back to the creek to set my lines again, and I notice my bells are gone. Okay. I couldn't remember if they had been there that morning or not, so I assume they were taken the previous night. I had only tied the rods to the tree after all, it was easy grabbing. I went back to my tarp, made some food and coffee, shook it off and went about my business. Now here's the somewhat embarrassing thing, I know to make noise in the woods if bears can be around and I like to sing. This isn't the same as singing well or singing manly shanties and Viking epic poems. This is, by and large, singing whatever had been playing on the speakers at my job. Suo, Lady Gaga, Katy Perry, Florence and the Machine Lord. You get the picture. Also, I'm a bass. Whatever, don't judge me. Stuff is designed to be catchy. So I went back on my rounds, and I found some fire morels or ash morels, which are a really rare treat. I was really excited, there are hundreds of them, and it's super late for them to show up. They are my favorite morels. I set about to collecting some, and kept myself company by singing. Alright, I was singing Bad Romance by one Stefani Germanotta, I know, I got to the woo-oh-oh-oh-oh-oh part, if you've heard it you know it, when I heard what sounded like someone harmonizing. Like I said, I'm a bass, but this was higher, tenor or alto and muted by distance a little. It was also completely and undeniably raw. Scratchy, gravelly, almost buzzy, syllables weird and clipped and disjointed, and a little off-key and off-rhythm. Uncanny valley for sounds. I shut up immediately and froze, and it continued for a moment, and then stopped. I was experiencing a little bit of what my friends always call puckerbutt, and started to slowly reach back behind for my Henry on its strap, and I heard a single sudden yelp or bark or something and some rustling from somewhere uphill of me behind the tree line. I take a few breaths, assuming I had freaked the other party out as much as they did me, and force myself to relax. I keep small binos on me and I scan the tree line, but I didn't see anything. I thought, this is probably whoever took my fish, probably someone squatting out here. I'm gonna keep my head on a swivel some. But if they were gonna be a problem, I feel like they already would have confronted me or taken a potshot or something. It also occurred to me, finally, that I could have just been hearing some weird echo. That thought gave me a little more peace and calm than I had a few minutes before, although it didn't explain the yelp, but normal animal activity does. Hooray rationalizing. I decide that that is enough morals, and I do not want to be drying them after dark, so I head back to camp, and get to making that happen. Am I an idiot? Maybe? I really didn't want to go home. I love wet weather, I've grown up in high deserts my whole life, and getting to really see some green that late in the year is such a treat. I wanted to stay, creepy bullshit be damned. I had had ailments where my brain had tricked me before, and I talked myself into believing that it was happening again. I kept singing to myself, more quietly than I was before, "Shes titanium and it happens again." The weird buzzy higher voice joins in, again from a distance, and again I feel the bottom drop out of my stomach. I know this probably just sounds creepy because I thought I was alone, but it's hard to convey how off-sounding this was. It was fairly close to what I had been singing, but like it was coming up out a culvert or something, and a few octaves higher. just as buzzy and clicky and hoarse sounding. If you've ever heard a tornado or a parrot talking or squeaking brakes or a train whistle, y'all get a sense of the qualities this voice had. It's a pitch a human can emulate with their throat, but the texture and shape of the sound aren't really how we sound, like that. I was not having it at all. I shut up immediately again, and this time got the Henry off my back and looked around me. I figured this had to be somebody messing with me. Not unheard of for good foraging spots. Look up the fights over huckleberry patches if you don't believe me, but definitely my first time. Again, the singing continued for a moment after I stopped, again from uphill and further in the woods, and definitely in a direction I hadn't gone yet. I called out, announced myself, and asked them to answer please. Nothing. Tried again, nothing. Silence again. And since I'm listening, I notice it again. Just wind in the trees in the creek. No animal noises. No bugs. My head had felt a little squeezy, so I decided I needed to check the weather when I was sure I wasn't going to get shot or something. Maybe a storm was rolling in. Bingo. I had headed over to a clearing and for sure storm was rolling in. As always, hard to judge speed, but it wasn't a bad idea to see about reconfiguring my tarp and having an early bedtime. Again, a little more at peace, since I figure any more bullshit from my apparent neighbor is going to be less likely. I went back to my fishing rods, lucked out, and found I had caught a bigger trout than the night before. I gutted it, cooked it, and ate it on the spot. Those of you in the know it's hard to beat. I collected some water for the next day, packed up my foraging stuff and lashed it all to trunk, and decided to call it there before dusk was on its way in. I set up my tarp in a lower to the ground, more wind RS system configuration, and set up a spare, older one as a kind of rainfly over the entrance. It's worth noting that this was an old lightweight silver-colored nylon backpacking tarp, fairly thin set up facing the clearing, since likely the worst wind would be coming from there. It also pretty much blocked my view of the clearing. I did another Widowmaker check, all good, made a hot cocoa and tucked in just as it was starting to come down. It came down hard. I had to put in some earplugs. Lightning was frequent and loud, and I didn't stay particularly dry and didn't get much sleep. It was, all in all, one of the most unpleasant AMD awe-inspiring nights I had had camping. Somewhere in the middle of the night, I thought I heard or felt something bounce off my tarp, kind of behind me. Well, not that weird. It happens in storms. Figured it was a branch. Then a few minutes later I see something, maybe a stone about the size of a plum, bounce off of my tarp, off the rain fly and land in front of me. I get my headlamp turned on and sure as shit, it's a rock. Rounded but not symmetrical or spherical and smooth. A river rock. Rocks don't fall off trees as a rule, and if this storm had picked one this round up I should have been airborne. Then another one a few minutes later, similar trajectory. Then nothing but the storm for a while. What am I gonna do? Investigate and get soaked. I had my gun, and if shit was gonna go down I was about as ready as I could be. I turned my headlamp back off. I then got treated to pretty much the most awe-inspiring amount of lighting I have ever seen in my life. The sky is lit up for seconds at a time, the earplugs were not protecting me from the thunder and my ears are ringing. I keep seeing the trees from the edge of the tree line and the clearing projected in shadow form, onto my rainfly over and over again, dancing this way and that. It was really beautiful, and if kind of inherently scary, also exhilarating. I really couldn't look away. Then, pretty clearly, I saw what looked like a person, walking along the tree line, outlined against the trees and my rainfly by the lightning. They were walking weirdly, not running from cover to cover, but just kinda strolling a little unsteadily like a drunk person. The silhouette wasn't bulky, and for some reason I got the impression they weren't wearing clothes, or if they were it was very very tight. Not like rain gear. They stopped, and whether or not they were facing me or the clearing I couldn't tell you, but I felt watched and very exposed. The figure stood, swaying a little, probably being pushed around by the winds, and just looked at whatever they were looking at. I got little glimpses here and there, as the lightning flashed, but they didn't appear to be moving much. It was pretty freaky, and I didn't move except to get my gun in front of me. Then I had another rock land on my tarp, bounce off and land in front of me. That was a bad moment. Lightning had stopped for a bit, and the thunder had died down for a moment. I had horrible, slow realization that I was very likely surrounded. Then I heard, cutting through the ringing in my ears and momentary silence, clear as it had been earlier but sounding much closer, the chorus from Titanium from behind my tarp. If you don't know the words, here they are. I'm bulletproof, nothing to lose, fire away, fire away. Ricochet, you take your aim, fire away, fire away. Then nothing. I looked back towards the front and realized I didn't see that figure projected by the lightning anymore, now that there was a lull in the lightning. I remember thinking shit, 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 just over and over again. I basically was going to have to crawl out of my tarp to get on my feet, and there was pretty much no way I was going to stay in my shelter anymore. I counted down from 10, and then pushed myself out and got to my feet, Henry in hand, and let out the loudest yell I could. I think I said something like, "Knock it off, I'm armed, F off." I was not in a good headspace. I was about as freaked out as I had ever been up to this point, and this was not all that long after the deer thing I mentioned in my other post. I was about ready to shit myself. I looked around the back of my tent with my light and didn't see anything. Nobody, just rain pissing down. I walked around the front of my tarp. Nobody. I could clearly see into clearing until my light got swallowed up by the rain. I walked around the edge of my little camp, stitching close to my tarps, and I didn't see anybody. I wish I could say I checked out the tree line for footsteps, but I didn't. I tried to yell again and my voice was completely in my throat. Another rock hit my shelter and bounced off, squarely in the cone of my headlamp, and I won't lie to you all, I lost it. I fired my Henry into the dirt about 10 feet in front of me, and I heard some immediate rustling in the woods uphill from me again. I yelled "Aum dumb panic bullshit," and though F me if I know why, I ducked into my tarp again, wrapped up as much as I could and huddled up with my gun. Eventually the storm broke, followed by dawn, and I got up to pack up my shit and get out of there. I was pretty shaky, and it took me a while to get my various gear all in hand and brought up to my shelter. I took a few moments to gather up the Round River stones, and I noted I didn't see any liquidus even in the creek, and definitely none sitting around the ground, the debris is too thick. My shelter was the farthest back thing in the woods of the various stations around the camp, except for my pack, which had a garbage bag over it. When I went around back the tarp to grab it, there were two more little sections of sapling, green wood, chewed looking ends, bark stripped again, just like before, leaning against the trunk below it. Nope. Not okay. It took me a second to go get my pack. I was that freaked out that I was now afraid of sticks. One my first night and two the second. Nope. F that. I finally got myself under control and went to grab my pack, and again I had a powerful sense of being watched. I shook off the cover, packed it in Q dry bag and turned Aoran to get my stakes out of the ground and pick up my tarp. There was a whole ripped open dead rabbit on the back edge of my tarp. The rain had washed off any blood that would have been on it, but the carcass was just splayed out there, like it had landed on it after being thrown, and then slid down the slope of it. It was fresh enough it didn't stink, and the digestive tract hadn't been punctured. I was instantly and totally numb. Mental dial tone. I picked it up with a stick, dropped it on my swamped out fire pit, yanked my tarp out of the ground one stake at a time, balled it up, yanked my rainfly out of its lashings hard enough to rip it, grabbed the rest my shit, loosely shoved it all in my pack, put my Henry so it hung in front of me and power walks or jogged my way out of there until I couldn't anymore and breathlessly walked the rest of the way to my car. I got in, drove about 20 minutes, and then had to pull over to throw up a few times and have a panic attack. I have never been back there alone, and definitely not unarmed. Even then, I only went back in 2017. I still can't listen to that song without feeling sick. I know, rationally, that it was probably squatters or somebody up there with me, but the same question keeps coming up. Why didn't they need lights? This is one of my desert stories. They are all true, with the given disclaimer that I am only human and have made mistakes in perception and judgment the same as the rest of us. I don't drink booze to more than a light buzz most of the time and have only blacked out once as early in my teens. I don't really mess with weed and avoid hallucinogens. Deserts are inherently kinda otherworldly places, even if you call one home. Dunes in particular are very odd. I know of only a few places where you can find them in my part of the world, The northernmost are the Kilpecker Dunes in the Red Desert of southern Wyoming, then to the south Great Sand Dunes National Park in Colorado, and further south yet are the dunes in White Sands National Park. Maybe there are others, but these are the ones I've been to many times. They are some of the few places where I feel reasonably comfortable practicing firecraft in dry seasons. They are an amazing place to learn about what you can and can't do without, and to practice more esoteric bushcraft and survival skills. These three locations are also, by amazing coincidence, where these stories take place. I'll start here with the one I've been to the most. I grew up in a high desert. They are unforgiving by their very nature, but if you can take what they throw at you, they are full of a surprising amount of life and beauty. The forests and mountains may be my sanctuary, but I fear in my heart that I am ultimately a desert creature, and the dry wind that steals away warmth and moisture also calls me home. I love the desert and the winds that allow nothing spare. I love the rocky creek beds where the bones of the fish that once gave them life blew into dust centuries ago. I love the rocky outcrops rotted away to globular non-forms by wind and ice. The desert is my home. Much like any other home, once you get used to its little tells, a sense of a place forms within you. You know when you're alone in it, when a cherished knick-knack has been moved, a four left open. Sometimes the echoes of a missing familiar sound can whisper a warning, a slight sense of offness. Sometimes, though, they can scream. The dunes of the Red Desert are not easy to get to, and depending on which part you are in, entry can be of dubious legality. I, of course, would never advise going where you aren't allowed, and certainly never have in my hastier, less cautious youth. No, sir. I had been many times and I tried to avoid camping or tooling around out there in the same spot. Alcohol was usually hauled out, water always was, and usually some lightweight means of defending oneself, but there isn't exactly a plethora of prey animals to feed a huge predatory population, so it's not really all that necessary. Somewhere around a decade ago, maybe more, maybe less, I took something of an on-again, off-again girlfriend of mine out to the Red Dunes, hopefully for a night of fun, if not outright debauchery. The pretense, which she later happily confirmed was pretense for her as well, was that we were there to practice air-based water collecting techniques and firecraft. I've never been much of a smooth talker, but what can I say, hope springs eternal. I won't use any real names, but I'll refer to her by the trait I most associate with her, so let's call her Grace. It was a drive and a half, but eventually we got there, and in relative comfort. Like many young women in the Mountain West, parental worries of their daughters being stranded somewhere by buying them overbuilt SUVs with a WD and enough creature comforts to make you feel like you never left home at all. As they have the gas efficiency of a derrick fire, and Grace was nothing if not practical, she had yanked out half the seats and turned the inside into huge cargo space, including a secondary gas tank. I understand that this is not necessarily safe if done by an amateur, and is typically outside of the cab in a truck bed, but whatever. Not my vehicle. Anyway, this was good as we burned a lot of gas to get out there, and the odd was very handy. We got there around the hottest part of the day, which in the early fall isn't so bad, and hiked out to where we wanted to set up camp. I had on occasion read about then before, and decided to attempt a travois with a couple of poles I had brought for the purpose. For the time expenditure of around 20 minutes of setup, and the purpose of dragging shit along the sand, I gotta say not bad. I was able to haul all of that bullshit out by myself around 3.5 miles from where we parked. The dunes cover a truly huge space, and my favorite parts are of course the hardest to get to, as they tend to be the farthest from the adverse. I don't have an issue with them necessarily, but I like the dunes best when it's quiet enough to hear them sing. I don't understand it well enough to explain it. Yeah, I'll have to look it up. They are what are known as living dunes, and they make a noise folks call singing. Of course, as a younger man trying in a self-awarely stupid fashion to impress my date with my muscles and trying to maintain a lively conversation without revealing how winded I was, don't judge. Walking on shifting sands is hard. I wasn't listening for the singing of sand, but trying to catch what Grace was saying over the wind. This story isn't about that part anyway, but I can say, even with something of a bittersweet taste in my mouth now, that it was a pleasant time with a person I once loved, and I wouldn't have traded it for the world. We set up our camp in the nook between a few dunes, erecting a virginal handmade tent of Grace's design and manufacture with some difficulty and good-natured swearing. It was pretty cool, a kimdi of low wedge designed to be erected in high wind zones and remain warm. It had a dead air space built in, which was a pretty neat feature to my mind. Along with it, we discovered why a Dakota fire pit doesn't work well on shifting sands, which should have been obvious if either of us thought about it for more than a half second, and thoroughly chastised by the cruel dictates of basic physics, dug a regular fire pit like folks with functioning frontal lobes. We set up a few frames which held elevated tarps with stones in the middle over half-buried buckets to attempt to collect dew as well. I showed her the basics and Grace lit her first friction fire with a willow bow drill, a cottonwood baseboard and yucca stalk spindle. This is my go-to combo in the western steppe, by the way, in only a few tries. As the pre-dusk light show that descends every evening, known to the natives as Golden Hour, probably to everybody for all I know rolled across the dunes and mountains of the Red Desert like so much maple syrup over harsh and unusually topographically variable pancakes, Grace and I were letting some stew cook over the fire while I showed her how to process yucca for fiber. We had a very pleasant evening characterized by not enough stew and too much whiskey, and a song I wrote very much not for her, except in the fact that it very much was accompanied by one of those horrible little broom-shaped traveling guitars. As is the way of the fortunes of all young dipshits trying to impress women who they should know have them dead to rights already, the B string broke halfway through. If you can't make the object of your affection swoon, making them laugh their asses off isn't a bad consolation prize. We ended the night wrapped in a blanket by the fire, watching the moon rise and the stars do their gentle revolving dance around Polaris until I carried her, snoring like bandsaw, into her sleeping bag. I settled into mine and let the sound of the wind and the singing dunes carry me to sleep. As an aside, folks who might still benefit from this advice, take time to remind yourself to remember moments like these as they happen. They are gifts, and they should be treasured as such. I rested comfortably for a while, maybe an hour or two, before the whiskey reminded me of the debt. I now owed it, and I went to relieve myself. I was immediately taken aback by two things. One was the ludicrous brightness of the moon. Despite the residing in the Red Desert, the Kilpecker Dunes are in fact a kind of creamy tan color, and on nights with a full moon, you might find darker conditions under a storm cloud in the middle of the day. The light seemed like it was pulsing a little, which I assume was probably more to do with dehydration and booze than the actual light sources. The second thing I noticed was the calm. It's almost always windy in Wyoming. It just is. I grew up there walking to school in steady 40 miles per hour winds. Calm does happen, but it's usually a relative calm like only 8 miles per hour winds. This was still. Waking up to the calm is like waking up in a strange room you don't remember falling asleep in. Not inherently bad per se, but disquieting and alien in a small but pervasive way. I climbed up a nearby dune because if I have to urinate, I may as well do so from a great height. The men reading this will understand, and because I wanted a good view of the surrounding area under its unusually well-illuminated conditions. The only sound was my footsteps, my breath, and the gentle hum of the dunes themselves. Not even an owl to be heard. As I got to the top, a mountain came into view. Actually, several did. This isn't an unusual experience in the Rockies, as visibility can often be hundreds of miles in clear conditions and farther FEM elevation. What was of note was that above the ones to the north of me, there were flashes and flickers of light. Thunderstorm up north was my first thought, which would have been the safe bet. But I saw no clouds past them. I then noticed the ghostly colors of the lights and realized I was watching the Aurora Borealis, which I was hitherto unaware could be seen from that far south. I took a moment to relax and enjoy it, before scanning around me to see what other sights the moon would show me. It was then that I spotted, down below me in a flatter area, what appeared to be many numerous four-legged creatures. Cows, sheep, antelope, hell, even deer or elk wouldn't be that strange. I honestly couldn't tell you what they were, only that where were probably more than 20 and less than 50, more about that in a moment. But in the middle I swore I saw an old-school I-shit-you-not covered wagon. Not the pioneer kind, but the blockier, fully roofed shepherd's hut on wheels that dotted Wyoming like freckles 120 years ago. Folks think it was the cattle that built the West, but Wyoming first and foremost was built on sheep. However, whatever I was seeing, it was all backlit by the moon, so they were casting shadows from the side facing me. Now, I'll be honest with y'all, I don't have the absolutely clearest vision. It's not bad, better with glasses, but I don't usually bring them with me to throw a leak in the middle of the night. So when I say the movement of these critters and the wagon looks strange, almost flickery, I expect you to take it with a grain of salt. I expect you to say it had something to do with the aurora or my eyes being tired, and those are all legit. Thankfully, I have really good hearing and olfactory perception. What my mediocre vision doesn't explain is why I was looking at something probably less than a mile away, and I couldn't hear it on a still night. Wagons are noisy. They creak worse than boats, even when new. Livestock are noisy, and I'd find it odd to see a group that size with no bells around their necks. Nothing. Silence. Furthermore, why would you try to travel by night? It was bright, sure, but it's not like that's a common practice, at least not according to anything I've ever heard. You want your critters together and easily defended from predators, that's what I understand. I watched them for a while, moving slowly across the ground almost like they were underwater. Slow enough, I broke off a yucca stalk and stuck it into the ground to mark the progress. Slow, but it was there. I stayed up there, watching the lights and the procession of shadows for a long time. Eventually, I decided to whistle at them, the two fingers in the mouth, super loud angry dad whistle. I heard it echo back at me, and then nothing. I yelled aloud, "Hello," at them as well. Echo and nothing again. Huh. No change in pace, no lights. I started to think the progress might be the moon moving across the sky, and not whatever I thought it was. So I decided to go grab my binoculars, and try to wake up Grace to at least see the lights. It was a little treacherous descending, but I made it in one piece. Camp was as I had left it, and I relaxed a little. I opened the tent flap and dug around a little, found my Nox, but my admeps to rouse my lady friend were unsuccessful. She was not having it. Not at all. She rolled over and went back to sleep, and chastised, I went back up to the top of the dune. It took me a little longer this time. I was definitely feeling the climb by the time I got to the crest again. It looked like a little progress had been made, according to my yucca stalk markers. Curious as hell, I decided to use the binoculars to try to make out what I was looking at. I couldn't find the shadows in the binoculars. There are two possible influences on that, one being these were old binoculars, and they had been stuck in maximum zoom since I had gotten them. The other would be it was in the wee hours of the morning and I had, several hours earlier, imbibed some booze. But try and try again, nothing. I couldn't get eyes on the critters or the wagon. Couldn't hear them, couldn't get a long distance look at them. What was I to do? I said F it, and went back to bed. Whatever I was looking at wasn't hurting me, it was just curious, and I had grown drowsy and cold lying on the cold sand. I narked the direction with one of the stalk segments, slid down the dune on my ass, and crawled back into the tent. As I lay there, waiting for sleep in the warm and dark, I heard that gentle dune noise again, and the wind picked back up. My lullaby. Just as I was drifting off though, I thought I heard a whistle echo across the sands, but from very far away. I put it down to my ears playing tricks on me, and when I next opened my eyes it was morning. Problem was, I was sitting next to the still crackling fire, not in the tent, and Grace was leaning against me as we sat wrapped in a blanket. I know. F you, this was just a dream, you dick. I can hear you just fine. There are a few problems with that hypothesis though. One was, I put out the fire before going to bed. In camping in a giant ashtray with a shovel in hand, it was effortless to put out and I remembered doing so very clearly. Another was that I was wearing shoes which I hadn't done to go relieve myself, and I hadn't done since we started the fire the night before, since I wanted a better grip on my baseboard to show Grace how to light a fire with a stick and bow. I have monkey feet, judge away. Here's another. I could see my footsteps up the dune and the trail from my impromptu derriere sledding session. Ukawe. I woke Grace up, and she said that she thought we had slept in the tent. I concurred, and we sat there blearily blinking at a fire we didn't remember building. I asked her to start the coffee and climbed back up the dune, this time with my compass and my binoculars. My yucca fragments were there, and I got a heading, scoping out where I thought they were the night before. Still didn't see anything that would have made sense, so I headed back down once more on the Izhchikh Express, and talked to my girlfriend about what I had seen. She wasn't particularly freaked out by any of it, confidently told me I was still asleep or sleepwalking when I saw lights and the bizarre caravan. She was a little concerned by the lost time and not remembering getting up, but I think to her credit as a reasonable person, she thought I was winding her up. I wasn't offended. I was, however, racked by curiosity. What the hell had happened? I'm not a sleepwalker as far as I know, and I, as I am now, writing this, have lost time before out in the wilderness, but never before this incident. Was it just weird shadows? Had I been asleep? My markers were there, so I had been pretty lucid for a somnambulist. One simple test I thought of would confirm or deny it. I decided to throw on my boots and hike over to where I thought the trail should be by my best guess, while I let Grace do her morning routines. A short, brisk walk later, and I found nothing. No prints of any kind. This part wasn't as sandy as some others, so prints wouldn't have been everywhere, but there were none. Likelihood of sleep and booze-fueled hallucinations increasing. I did a fiery Thauerpug E-arch of a few hundred yards in several directions, leaving my water bottle as a guide for where I thought it should be. No prints. I didn't give up. I trust my senses most of the time and I'm stubborn. Also, I wasn't seeing anything that, given the angle of the moon, should have cast a shadow like that. Scrub, low brush. No trees, no boulders. I kept looking first along the route I feared they would have coned from. No prints again. Something did catch my eye though. In a less sandy patch, I saw a long stretch of depressed clay. A rut, I realized, and some mild depressions in the rock here and there. A rut from a wheel made of something harder than modern tires, with a less gentle suspension. Now that I was looking for it, I saw more here and there, headed to bisect the dunes from one grassland to the next. Just an old, old trail from long ago. I don't know what any of that was. I isn't of sober or clear mind, although I was far from blackout drunk or sleep deprived. Grace got angry at me after a certain point of talking about it, so I stopped bringing it up. We finished out our outing. Our water collectors were successful in that they collected dew and unsuccessful in that it was about a cup and a half from the three of them together. We made a bolo out of some rocks and yucca cordage pre-made. It's a process, and what we had made while we were there was minimal and strictly as a tutorial. We practiced at ladles, ruined some perfectly good flint in the attempt to make a pair of blades. We shared many good meals together. Still, overall, a very pleasant trip. After another couple of uneventful nights, we headed home. I hadn't discussed it with anyone since, really. I have no good explanation. I have, however, been out there again, and while I've never seen anything like that again, twice in my recollection I whistled at the top of the dunes and later that night, I swore I heard one back. Probably just another camper. Probably. I grew up in Belgium, Europe. Since I was young, I have been with my friends in the Scouts. It is mixed in Belgium. We do not have boys and girls apart usually. We start Scouts when we are 6 years old, and then we go through all the groups until we are 18, that is when we become Scouts leaders usually. I am saying this to give you a little background on me and my friends. We are people who I would consider close with nature, camping and overall used to a lot. I would not say we are your typical rough outdoors lumber type of person, but we can manage ourselves well through a forest. Back when we were around 16 years old, one of my friends invited our group to go wild camping in the forest that we have close to our homes. It is not your average American national park, I wish, with stories of Bigfoot or worse, but it definitely has its own charm and legends. We got a centuries-old tale about werewolves in our forest, and a couple of legends about witches. It is not a huge forest, but one can get easily lost if they are not familiar with its trails and all the trees look the same. This being said, to describe it the best I can, we were very familiar with the forest since we were small children playing in the tree line, and afterwards as teenagers being blindly dropped with nothing but a map in the middle of it by our leaders. I do not know whether this game is popular in other countries in the Scouts, but in Belgium it is very well known and quite safe actual. We do not have bears or, until a year back, wolves, and when dropped we would carry lights so just in case anyone didn't manage his or her way out. they would get spotted easily by a searching party again. This is not a national park that is so huge a person could go missing for days. That being said, again, we were very familiar with the forest, and we were all locals from the village nearby. So we started our camping journey with our bikes from the village to the entrance of the forest, and once there we would continue to the deeper parts of the forest on foot, since it was an area with lots of hills and few trails for bikes. The mood was good. It was a beautiful, although a bit cold, autumn evening with few clouds and a beautiful sunset. We hiked our way through the forest until we got to a small clearing with some grass and prepared our tents for the night. We made a small campfire. We always learned to be safe, never putting in danger the forest, and ate some beans and sausages for dinner, together with some tasty Belgian beers. Around 11 p.m. we decided to call it a night, and we each went to sleep in our tents and sleeping bags. Everything seemed like a normal camping day in our forest. Then suddenly at around 1:30 a.m., we woke up to the sound of what seemed to be like drums. A couple of us got out of our tents with our flashlights, asking what was going on. Our forest had always been a quiet place at night, and during the day the only noise you could hear were the critters. So you can imagine the surprise of hearing drums in the middle of the night. We were located on a flat area of the side of a hill to have a beautiful view in the morning. And at the other side of the hill over the top, we saw light and smoke of what seemed a bonfire. We figured that had to be the place where the drum noise was coming from. So the ones who had gotten out of our tents decided to just go over there to see what was going on, and maybe talk with the people who decided that it was a good plan to be making noise in a calm forest at 1:30 a.m. We hiked over the hill so that we could have a glance at the people to know who we were dealing with first. We walked about 15 minutes before we could actually see the bonfire. It was located in a small circled clearing with lots of trees and bushes around. We crouched towards the bushes in the tree line to get a look of what was going on, and that is when we saw the people with the drums. A couple of them, I recall a group of 5-6, sat around the fire playing the same tune on the drums the whole time, and another group of people was dancing around the bonfire. Although I say dancing right now, I mean people making weird, unnatural movements, almost as if they were having spasms, and honestly, the best way to describe it is bodies contorting. The people dancing around the circle were wearing suits. A first glance would make it look like people dressing to be one with nature. A second glance would make it look like pagan suits, almost like the original celebrations of Halloween, see Samhain. This was when we realized that whatever these people were doing, whether it was some sort of gag or seriously some sort of ritual, we would be better off if we did not confront them. So we decided to back off and go back to our camping spot as quiet as possible. Once there, we decided to wake the rest and tell them what we had seen. We packed up that same moment and left to the entrance of the forest, got on our bikes, and all went back home. We have since still frequented the forest, both for scouts and in our free time with friends and family, and we have never seen this circle of people again. However, it stuck with me ever since, and I will never forget how we felt out of our place in the forest for the first time in our lives. It is the first and luckily the last time that we did not feel welcome in our own forest. So the other night on a mountain trail I've gone to for years to watch the sunset, I felt like some guy was tracking me back to my car. First time in my entire life of hiking alone, and I've done some sketchy shit alone, at dusk that I felt uneasy. So the mountain trail I go to is huge with many different side trails on it. But there is one main trail that goes straight up and down the center of the mountain, which is usually pretty quick to get up to watch the sunset. Done it hundreds of times at this point in my life for years now. Have watched the sunset and walked back to my car in pitch black many times. Never felt uneasy the way I did that night. I get to the peak, walk back down a little bit to my usual viewing spot of the sunset, and suddenly some guy, also alone, comes out off one of the side trails. Think nothing of it. Exchange a few words from a distance. Guy gets on his way and I can see him even as a small dot as he gets down to the bottom of the trail. But I'm thinking, well, there's only one way out of here and he knows I'm still up here. So I knew I wasn't sticking around for it to get dark. The minute the sun goes behind the mountain, I start my way back down. As you get closer to the bottom of the trail, there's a section that narrows and is nothing but woods or trees on each side before it opens up again to a huge open dirt trail, and then the parking lot. Heads on a swivel the entire way back down. I get to the creepy dark narrow part just before the open trail to the parking lot, and I hear someone make a noise, like a weird noise someone would just make to themselves, but loud enough as if they wanted me to hear. But I see no one and keep going. I get about halfway on the open dirt road almost to the parking lot and turn around, and someone is decently far behind me out of nowhere. I don't look back again. I pick up the pace, get to my car and book it. There was only one truck left in the parking lot by the time I got back, and it was on, and someone was definitely in the driver's seat. Call me paranoid, but again, I have never felt uneasy or like someone was following me like that ever in my entire life, and I have done about 80% of my hiking completely alone and a lot at night. Like deep woods type stuff at sunset or dusk, and never been almost scared like that before. This happened a while ago, but it really stuck with me, so I wanted to share it. I was at a friend's house for a weekend with a bunch of people, and we all went for a walk. She lives right at the edge of the countryside where there's fields and woods and whatnot, so we went down this forest path. Me and this other guy started exploring a bit deeper into the trees, and we'd gone quite far down a hill into the thicker trees, but then there was this clearing. There was a big log laying on the ground, and resting on it was a skinned deer. No bones or anything, just the skin and its head and antlers. The head was on the log, eyes missing, and the skin was just sorta draped down the front. Beside it was a crucifix, made out of planks, not just sticks, and tied up with bale string. Me and this guy freaked out, and I called out to our other friends to come see, but he told me not to show them because they'd find it too disturbing. He then shook it off and started climbing back up, but I just stared at it for ages, so long he waited for me and told me to walk away from it. There was also string attached to the crucifix that ran further into the woods, but following it wouldn't be very normal of me, so I just went back. I still can't comprehend what it was. Some kind of pagan ritual, some kind of prank. Not many people walk this forest path besides locals walking their dogs, and we'd come far off the path too. My friend that lived there said people didn't hunt in these woods, but I didn't want to push it with questions since I'd been told not to tell her. I understand I wouldn't want to know that there was something like that in the woods behind my house, but I find that the lack of answers has me thinking about it more and more. I think if I wasn't still alive today, I believe it was the beginning of a horror movie, where all my friends and I are killed off one by one by a forest witch. It was the perfect setup: friends hanging out at a country house for a weekend, two idiots go deep into the woods and find something disturbing. Death ensues. I still feel it was some kind of bad omen, unless I really don't know anything about hunting, and this is regular practice for people who hunt deer in the woods. Can anyone offer me some insight on this? Was this a sick joke? A deeper meaning? Or is this regular hunting setup? What if it's a curse? What if seeing this cursed me and posting this now? Pressing send. Will activate the curse. I will see. This is my getting lost in the woods story. I feel like I see so many of these, and they are always so relatable. I've been wanting to share my story in one of the subreddits since it happened, so this is it. This is long. This happened about 2 years ago. Me, my fiancé, and my best friend decided to go to this popular hiking trail near us. The trail leads to a giant rock that hangs off a cliff. It's a beautiful look over the city I live in. It's a far walk through the woods, you're on the same trail going straight for most of the hike. The trail eventually makes a sharp turn, gets thinner, and gets very steep. You really have to hike up this part, and then you reach an open fellet, you can see the rock above you. You have to climb up one more path that leads you to the rock. Even though the hike is long, the path is very easy, and it's hard to mess up, considering this is the only path in that area of the woods that I've found at least. I've done it multiple times at this point. Even hiked down well after midnight, after watching fireworks on the 4th of July. Anyways, the three of us decided, since we were walking close to the road that leads you to the trail, we were going to go visit. It was about 7 p.m. so it started to get dark pretty fast. We didn't even make it off the first part of the trail I already mentioned. It goes straight for about an hour until you get to the sharp turn. we didn't even make it to that. We decided since it was getting dark, we should turn around. We all had our flashlights on and everything was normal. We never set foot off the path. The path is pretty much dark and engulfed by the trees, but there is this one spot where the trees open up. You can see the entire downtown area of my city, and it feels very high up because this trail is basically in the middle of the hillside surrounding the whole town. If you have ever been to Pennsylvania, you get it. We got to the spot where the clearing is where you can see downtown. But it looked flip-flopped. I don't even really know how to explain it. It looked like the town was flipped like how you can like flip an image on your phone. Like someone took the town and flipped it the other way, if you get it. It was late and dark and we were tired of walking, so I just don't think we really took it seriously when we walked past. I still felt the weird feeling though, and I felt like everything was backwards all of a sudden. That's the only way I can really describe it, is backwards, and we all said the same thing to each other. It was my fiancé who said something first, which is just weird because usually he'd be the last to say anything in a situation like that. All he said was that he feels backwards. My best friend freaked out because she gets anxiety like that and said she felt the same way. I mentioned the clearing looked weird and they all agreed with me. They thought the same thing but thought they were being silly. At this point we should be close to the exit, but it felt like we were going in circles. The path started breaking like the path wasn't even the same we've been walking on, so we turned back around towards the rock to try to figure out where we were. We came back to the clearing and it still looked weird, so we took pics. I do have them still if anyone cares to see, but you wouldn't be able to make out that it looks flip-flopped unless you live in the same town. We knew we were at the clearing though, because it's the only part where the woods clear, and we knew that we were on the right path as we've never even got off it. We decided to turn back around towards the exit, but it didn't bring us to the exit. It also didn't bring us to the path that looked wrong and started to break. It was a whole new part of the woods we've never seen before. There was a door in the ground. It looked like a door to a mine maybe. We tried to do research, but there's no evidence of mine being there, but there is multiple mines in my city, so I wouldn't be surprised if it was just old and wasn't on record. Beside the door was about 5 or 6 white chairs with what seemed to be white sheets laying on the ground around them, like little pieces of white cloth. Not very big, just pieces. There was also beer bottles. The chair was in a circle formation, but there was no fire pit in the middle or anything, just this circle of chairs. Looking back, it could have been a little campsite someone made, but man was it scary af at night when you're lost. It really freaked us out, and every time we walked away it seemed we just made our way back to the chairs and the door. Obviously we start trying to call and text people we know for help, even called my parents, but no one answered. It was late, so I guess that makes sense. We are so lost and getting really scared, we are gonna have to sleep up here, lol. Eventually, after walking what seemed to be in circles, we just walked out. Like so fast, the exit was right there. We just walked on the path for a minute and was out like that. Almost immediately after we leave, I get texts back from people I was trying to get help from. And one more creepy thing, just to put the icing on the cake, there was like 1032 pics taken on my fiancé's phone at 10:32 p.m. Like a burst if you have an iPhone. They have these things called bursts where you can take a lot of pictures quickly. It was so weird, the pics were all just white. It's also weird how his phone took pics while he had his flashlight on at the same time. The pics were taken during the time we were lost. We didn't go back for about a year until me and my fiancé decided to go back and try and find the path we made it onto. Just for peace of mind. We couldn't find it, we couldn't find the door, we couldn't find anything weird. Except a giant meat grinder. I hate the woods so much. Freaks me out thinking about any woods or forest of any time. That's just one of the worst experiences for me. But I've had a few, honestly. I just hope people don't think I'm bullshitting. It sounds crazy to me, so I can imagine someone thinking I'm lying, but I'm really just looking for a possible explanation. It's one of the things that bother me to this day, and my fiancé doesn't like talking about it because there is just no explanation. Me and my best friend will still talk about it, but it goes nowhere because we have thought of every possible explanation we can think of. So any similar experiences or theories would be great.